Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, last night, 2 a.m., I'm laying in bed. What am I thinking about? Kratos.
Are you kidding? That's me, big time.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo. And joining me, as always...
All right, brother, it's me, a decapitated head. I think I know everything in the world, but actually after a while, I just become quite grating. It's me, Ben Vernell.
Oh, hard disagree. Hard disagree from me.
The man who shows up to every duel with a ceramic bottle full of Monster Energy drink. It's Adam, the God of Thunder from Down Under, Knox.
Here's me. I'm the God of Thunder from Down Under. Today I'm voiced by the new voice of Sonic the Hedgehog, the other game we'll be talking about this week. Generic guy.
Yes.
Sonic's back, and he's fucked up his voice. It's great. A lot of interesting voices for us to talk about this week as we record over... We should say the phone. Ben's under the weather.
The phone?
We're over the phone.
We're over the telephone.
I don't think my phone's even in the same room as me right now. It's being used in no way whatsoever.
Knox called me on the landline, and then he did that special thing where you can add a third one, and he called Tommy's landline, and here we are together.
I asked the operator to put one of those audio jacks to cut it in half, I guess, and wire it into a third hole in the middle. And she said, hey, buy me dinner first. And then I was like, not over the phone, please. Anyone could be listening in.
Yes, I'm the last person in the world to get COVID. I'm a special little boy. I think I'm on day 4 at the moment. And as we were saying before we started recording, the ability to like do anything has just left me. So honestly, not the worst week for two blockbuster video games to come out.
No, absolutely. And I was saying to you that, you know, that exhaustion with COVID really hits you pretty hard. Anyone who's had it will be familiar. And I said to you, get used to like building that into your day around 3 or 4 p.m. You're going to just absolutely eat shit. Anyway, here we are recording at 4:15 in the afternoon. So looking forward to a sharp drop off from Ben in the next few minutes.
We wanted to get... Because, we only got copies of God of War yesterday. So, of course, you know, we might not have played as much as some other people. I only got it yesterday, so, of course, I've only put in 16 and a half hours.
Absolutely.
So far. Not a joke.
I'm surprised you haven't finished it.
Yeah, I really was tipping we were going to get on here and we were going to get a deep review of the credits from Adam Knox. Yeah. I thought there was going to be, like, big bags under your eyes, no sleep for the last night.
A big, long game. It's very long and big.
I'm finding that, I think I'm about 4 or 5 hours in. Just haven't had the strength to continue playing at times. But I've even noticed already with the pacing, like, you kind of get to the first fork in the road where there's, like, an optional mission. And that mission is, like... an hour, and then you're like, you know, rather than being like, oh, search this tower and then go back. So yeah, I'm finding there's a lot of content in there. It's bigger. I don't know if it's necessarily better, but I'm sure we'll hash that out.
Turning down side stuff in a game like this, it always feels, it's so hard to me because it's like this, like so much work went into this. You know what I mean? Like it just feels, especially because there is like a literal fork in the road. And it's like just ignoring that and just going like, nah, I'm just going to barrel through this. I feel rude doing this. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm personally insulting the people who made. Like, I got to have a look at. I got to go have a look at what they crafted.
going to one of those like fancy degustation restaurants and being like, actually, just give me 3 of the 41, please.
Yeah, I actually...
You can fuck off with the quail bullshit. I'll just have with the lamb at the end.
That's right. Give me soup, give me a steak, and give me an affogato.
Yep.
Buy but me what dinner you... first.
What are you doing, Adam? Are you doing all the side stuff? You going in on all that?
I have been. So I think, I mean, I don't know where to start and if we should start with Sonic first and then go, but like...
No, let's start positive.
Yeah, cool.
I reckon let's go Sonic first. What do you think?
Get it out of the way.
Well, I'll say broadly with the two, the weird similarity is that there's an awful lot to do at any one point. And then also, like, it is absolutely God of War Ragnarok takes its time to really get going, especially from the point of view of the narrative. So even if I think we're all early on enough before finishing it, I would say it's hard to talk about the overall effect of especially the story, because it's I feel like I've reached kind of maybe the 2/3 end of act 2-ish, maybe even just halfway bit. And it's already improving on some of the earlier stuff. It's a slow burn, so we'll keep that in mind when we talk about God of War. Sonic Frontiers is the same thing, because it starts off fucking crazy bad, so surely it'll get better.
Yeah, let's just flag for people who might have, like, you know, put into their podcast app search, you know, God of War Ragnarok. This won't be like a full review. We, like Adam said, we haven't finished it. We'll probably, it's a two-part review, right? We'll come back next week.
We'll be more in depth.
I reckon
next
I'll
week,
have finished it, because I you know, don't want to stop playing it. I've got plenty of time coming up. And Nox, you're already, you know, nearly there.
The irony of you playing a game where you're controlling like one of the strongest men who's ever existed while you're in the weakest form you've ever been in your life. I love it.
It's very empowering. I feel great. I feel wonderful. But yeah, we'll don't expect an IGN style comprehensive review here. We'll give our thoughts. We'll probably come back next week with some more fleshed out thoughts. But yeah, I guess we can talk about Sonic Frontiers. I really want to.
our thing of God of War, it'll be like oh shit, what's his name? The guy who does all of those impressions.
Dana Carvey?
Damn it. Ah!
Dana Carvey?
No. How fucking old are you? No,
he's
it's
the
not
guy
Dana
who does
Carvey.
All the impressions.
No, he doesn't. Not anymore. There's that
Frank
other guy.
Frank Caliendo?
That's the guy. Frank Caliendo, not Dana Carvey. You middle-aged man. I'm an elderly man since I can't remember. Anyway, it's like Frank Caliendo on Drag Race because it's giving impressions. Is what I'll be doing. Yeah. Not all worth the time. I'll edit out the thinking, but it still won't be worth it.
Okay, so Sonic Frontiers.
Elliot
I tell you what,
Loney? Is that who you were thinking of?
Sonic Frontiers, I tell you what, now that I own this game, I really hope I put a pause on the number of like pop-up ads that I was getting. But also, even when you put the disc into the console, it comes up with this same tagline, which I'm sick of saying, experience Sonic like never before. Shut up.
That's such a low effort tagline.
Exactly. It's like, that could be true, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's good. Like, that could be true.
Right.
This could be a fucking Tetris clone. I don't think they've done
Sonic
like that.
New generation.
Yeah.
It literally does just mean like, you've never played this game before.
Right.
So I guess they're not getting sued on false advertising by saying it's very good.
Their point being that the difference with this new Sonic game is that it is open world, pretty much.
Yep.
Yep.
It is a kind of a different open world than what you might... Because the Breath of the Wild thing was the comparison that people were making in previews and things like that. And you jump into this and Sonic is definitely running around a bigger area than he may be used to, but it doesn't feel super different to how Sonic has always felt.
It's a bit more kind of like it's a bit Breath of the Wild in the sense that like there's these little portals gathered around the area that are like these little levels, these little challenges, and you're having to kind of clear them to go on and do other stuff. So I guess that's kind of the equivalent of like the shrines in Breath of the Wild, but slash with a bit more of like kind of almost like a Bowser's Fury thing where they're not like little puzzles, yeah. they're little kind of platformy levels. So in that sense, you're in the broader world, you're experiencing Sonic like never before, but then you're going mm-hmm. into these little portals and you're experiencing Sonic very much like how you've been experiencing him since 2003.
Right. And yeah, with the Breath of the Wild comparisons, I also felt there were like pretty heavy aesthetic sort of rip-offs in there. Like a lot of the little stings are like boo 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 boo, and the like some
piano
of the score
music and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, even like some of the interface design, like leaning a bit towards that more minimalist style, which is a good style. I like it. But you could kind of smell it on this game of like it's they've just looked at, you know, the big Nintendo game and gone, yeah, let's steal that, which is kind of what they've been doing since the consoles died.
They're always a couple steps behind.
Yeah.
Well, also they've been asked about it in interviews and they've gotten really prickly about it, ironically enough.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's wrong with saying like, yeah, we're inspired by one of the most popular games of all time that kind of like redefined a mascot hero kind of person, and that made us like think about our thing differently. Like, there's nothing wrong with, especially when you boot it up and it's like, yeah, this is so similar. This is like borrowing so much.
Yeah, I think maybe the thing that would make me prickly about it if I was on the promotional team for it is that comparison is not going to end up being favorable for them.
Of course, yeah.
Whilst they've taken a lot of the surface level Breath of the Wildness, there's none of the sense of exploration or scale or adventure or anything. What you're ending up with is like one large level that has a whole bunch of incredibly small levels on it, effectively. Like one little platform that you would get in a regular level, if that makes sense, where you've got collectibles kind of littered all over the place and you are going through and doing these piecemeal little tiny
off bumpers and go, like a section of a 2D level. Yeah, you bounce off this bumper to that one, go along a rail and get six rings, and that's what you're talking about, right?
Exactly. If you structured all of these small challenges that are littered around each of the multiple islands that you go through for this open world, they would together make like three or four levels or something, and you break them up and put them in different areas on this larger landmass, and that's the style of open world it's doing, which I weirdly am having a lot of fun with, even though I think that in almost every like measurable part of this game, it's like objectively bad, as close as you can be to nothing in it is constructed super well.
Well, I think the one thing that is good is like, is that rapid fire platforming. Like when you do get into a section where it's like almost pushes you onto rails of like, you just jump over here and then you get a boost forward, you bounce, you go along here, you do a little zoom, like that does feel cool, like, but it's like it feels cool in the way that being on a roller coaster feels cool.
Literal rails a lot of the time, and
same
sort of thing as they've been doing since like Sonic Adventure. It was the whole time that Sonic has been 3D since the 9th of the 9th, 99. I happen to remember. You know my memory trick for that? It's 2 years and 2 days before 9/11. That's how I remember it.
Right, which is
also
your birthday.
Fortnite. But it is the same thing, but then kind of expanded in the way that Bowser's Fury was, and I loved Bowser's Fury. It was so much fun, like just zipping around and finding something new every few seconds, and seeing these big constructions off in the distance that you wanted to go and figure out what the little trick was, and all these creative ideas. And that's where Sonic falls flatter than, hey, here's something crazy. This Sonic game is not as good as a Mario game at platforming.
Whoa.
Because like it's not got the same creativity. It's not got the same sense of like fun to it, or like the tight controls, or any of the sort of, also you can't see them off in the distance. It's crazy for this like to be this open world game where the whole thing is like, oh wow, what's that over there? Well, you can't see anything over there because the pop-in is absurd.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, if you run up to something, you can't necessarily see, like, with these sorts of stretches of courses that you're kind of having to go through in the open world to get to one of the collectibles, you often can't see the start and the end at the same time.
Yeah. Mm.
Which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's good. There's a lot of mist and fog in front of you as well. And as opposed to like a Bowser's Fury even, which is like not, you know, or an Odyssey or something, like it's just not as dense, you know, like it, you look at screenshots of like this first, you know, world you're in, first level, and it's like, it kind of looks like Death Stranding or something.
Yeah.
Which is not, there's not enough character there for a Sonic the Hedgehog game, I don't think.
Which is such a strange choice to make because Sonic has years and years of all these really cool looking and original and unique looking environments that they've put into a ton of the games that aren't utilized super well here, where you get a few kind of flashes of that in those like shrine levels, whatever they're actually called, where the proper constructed levels. But yeah, out in the open world, it would be genuinely immediately a more interesting and cooler thing to be running around an open world green hill zone looking place.
That would be sick. I was saying to you guys the other day, like, an open world where it's like that, and then you get on the fringes of that and you start to see like the city building up, and then you're in the casino kind of area. Like, that could be so cool. And it's funny because like Sonic, like the 9th of the 9th, 99, you know, they kind of rebranded him. They felt like they had to like hip him up and have him be like not a cute little hedgehog. And it's just, it's aged so badly. Like, his voice now, he's like this kind of like jockish sounding kind of dude. And
hey,
it's
man.
Funny, like,
what's
I remember
Sonic. It's so weird. It's like
it's
you're
so weird.
Like the cheapest birthday party Sonic who's come up with a suit that like smells of the gin that the guy's breath also smells of.
Yeah.
And he's walking around kind of creeping out all the kids.
Yeah.
It's that style of Sonic.
And like, you know, I do remember a period where, you know, Nintendo kind of, you know, just dug their feet and they were like, no, this is the character. And there was a period where it was like, oh, is this going to get kind of like left behind in the, you know, in the dust kind of thing? But there's now, like, you look at, like, the link between all the Mario games, like, there is a cohesion. Like, they all do look like, even though they iterate and they do different stuff with it, they do still feel like they kind of all exist in the same world. Whereas Sonic, like, every game canonically feels like it is, like, a hard reboot where they do. So, like, having an intro where you're, like, they're flying around on a plane and it's like, oh, yeah, we're off on another. It's like, this isn't the same little cunt from Sonic 2. There's just, you know what I mean? There's just no way.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But I guess, like, early 90s kind of teen with attitude was still relatively innocent. That would just be the team being like, back off, man! And like tapping his foot if you waited too long.
Yeah.
One eyebrow raise. But like if you gave him the attitude of a teen with attitude of today, he'd be fucking doxing you and swatting you and that, like Sonic running around being like, L-Ag, man, you're a cock egg, man! Like, don't give him attitude, modern attitude.
Yeah, keep him wordless. Like, he's, you know, like Mario doesn't need to be like riffing it up in the middle of a game. Like Sonic just being a little creature that's running around. Like this, yeah, I just got blue blur pilled by the by all the like lead up to it and like the bizarre press. Like, you know, playing it, it's hard not to think about like when people were playing it at whatever show it was on display at, and you know, a lot of the people came back and were like, yeah, this just needs more time in the oven. And the director just went, fuck you, we're not delaying this game. You just don't get it. It's like, it's hard not to imagine. Because the general consensus of this by a lot of outlets, you know, it's sitting on like around a 7 out of 10 on Metacritic. And the general consensus does seem to be like, this is kind of the right direction for this franchise to be going in. They haven't quite gotten it with this one. Like, you can sort of see if they kind of built on this, you know, they could have something pretty good. And like, it's hard not to imagine the version of this where they like halo it and put it on the shelf for a year and do those refinements and bring it out. Like, it could have been a lot better. Like, as it stands, like I'm not minding running around in the open world. I think it's fine. And I think that's kind of the biggest problem with it, is that, like, you know, we have so much like incredible art available to us in so many mediums that sometimes just being unremarkable is as bad as just outright being bad. Like, this isn't excelling in any area in any way. It's all just like it's all just a fine experience, which is just like, it costs the same as a, you know, as a game that is, it costs the same now as an Elden Ring. So it's like, why, you know, why would you bother?
Well, especially when it comes to Sonic, people have a really intense desire for Sonic to be good. And people, I think, convince themselves that it has been when it hasn't been. And like, I want Sonic to be good. And I'm having fun with it. I don't know what it is. There's something about this where, like, as negative as, you know, we are on this game, and I think accurately so, and pretty sexy while we're doing it. But like, the fact that there's so much wrong with this, and from like the controls to the environment to the looks to the story to everything, I'm still really enjoying it. There's something sincere about this game. There's something like that it's trying so hard to have fun.
It's the underdog.
Even though it's falling.
Yeah.
It's
an underdog.
It's the underdog.
It is. It's an underhog.
Yeah, it is.
Sonic
the underhog.
I want Sonic to do well, but just on all those sort of technical objective or whatever levels, it's not. But there is a sense of fun to this, and it's probably the best. I mean, as with a lot of people, I haven't played a Sonic game fully, other than maybe Mania, I suppose, in years and years.
Right.
But the thing that people say is that they're bad, and you see footage of them, you're like, yeah, that looks not good. But this is quite fun for whatever reason. Even though it's not good, I'm enjoying myself moving Sonic around. The music is great. I'll say that. Like in the levels, I'm really enjoying the kind of
house
garage-y.
Trance sort of. I'm not minding that either. I think it's, I think that's a high point. Yeah, there's just something about, like, it is a very generic kind of open world, other than the like flourishes of the loop-the-loops and stuff like that. Like the actual just environment, like we were saying, it's just kind of like drab version of Breath of the Wild. But it's just something about, like, being this little blue guy, being able to run really fast around it, that's like, I'm almost enjoying it more on the level of, like, it's a tech demo.
Right.
You know what I mean? Where it's not like a game I'm interested in, like, completing or feeling, like, challenged by, or, you know, like I'm having a blast with these gameplay mechanics. It's like, yeah, look at this little cunt running really fast around here.
Fuck, he's quick, eh?
Kind
of
cool.
I like holding, you hold down triangle and, like, a kind of line of energy starts coming out from behind you like a Tron motorbike, and if you do a circle around something, it'll hurt them, and that actually feels really fun to do. I'm enjoying doing that particular little move. That mechanic is fun. You've got these like giant enemies in the world who you're kind of running up to. There's a bit of repetition of them and stuff, but they're sort of like early on kind of a dragon thing flying around, and you run on its back really fast as it zips around the world, and there's some cool stuff in there that there's something in there to enjoy. It's just like a technical mess, and there's something that's existed for years and years, possibly since the start of Sonic, where I don't think they've known quite how to make a game about a guy moving fast fun and keep accidentally making a platformer, and it doesn't work as a platformer. You've got it should be something else, maybe.
Yeah, it should be like that Yokai's Island Express or whatever it was called, where it's like, it's a pinball game. That's why it's fun. It's a pinball platformer. Like, that is the fucking, what's it called when you move around the
Frank
world?
Frank Caliendo.
That's it. Yeah.
Torque.
No, like the manner of moving around the world. Like,
momentum, speed,
inertia.
No. Like, the way, like, as like walking and running and bouncing are all types of, not trajectory. What's the word?
Oh yeah, propulsion.
No.
Traversal.
Traversal. Fuck. The manner of traversal is being a pinball. You know, like that is why Sonic is fun. That is why that other game that I think Tommy and I both played and played maybe the sequel of, was there a couple of those games? Like that's why it's fun. It's not fun to, like, sort of play Crash Bandicoot, but then go really fast, but then bang into a wall sometimes. Like that's not what Sonic or any game should be. And I think the other problem, apart from that genuine like confusion about how to make these, you know, contemporary games, is also I don't know why there's robots in this game. You know, like, what about this is Sonic? What about these enemies scream Sonic?
Well, the design just feels terrible.
It's not just like a tech demo in terms of the tech. It's like they took a Sonic sprite from a Sonic Adventure game or whatever and just put it into some random, like, halfway done Unreal Engine 5 game.
I haven't found that quite as much. I haven't minded that as much as you guys, but I do see the point. Because when you get some of those, like, you know, the weird little bugs who are half robot, half bug in the actual levels, then you're like, oh, it's that guy with the weird ring around his waist and he buzzes around. You know what I mean? Like, when you see one of the...
They suck in both versions. like the level design of the portal or the cyberspace levels does say Sonic to me, you know, because it's like got all the bright boosters and the red bumpers and the, you know, all the stuff that's from the first three or so games. But yeah, like, why wasn't that the design aesthetic for the whole fucking game?
Yeah, because also the design of those portal, the design of those portal levels too, like, there's just something about them that just feels very like, you know, a Mario level is like, you get in and you go, oh, I see what they're doing here. Cool. This and like the little shrines in Breath of the Wild was like, oh, okay, this is the theme of this little puzzle. None of these have any kind of like sense of, they literally all do feel like someone just went, oh, this is a loop, and then you just, you know, no. What I mean? They don't feel like a, oh, cool, what a neat little design. They just feel like someone just queefed out like however many there are, like 50, just like... and then, you know,
Sonic
like
leftover one of the Google searches where you will get the highest number of results too.
But yeah, like leftover from one of the other previous 3D Sonic games, which
they've all had that thing where like that Sonic 06, which is like the famously bad one. They just have some people. Sonic Adventure was weird too. There were just people walking, and it's like a water monster thing. The design is often, but the hard thing with the design of like kind of all the Sonic games and this one especially is that it's hard. It's too hard to read the environment. You're not quite sure what's coming up and like, or what is relevant information in the course.
Yeah.
And then it's coming at you so quickly that the fact that it's hard enough to read and moving fast means you don't feel in control as much as you should a lot of the time, especially when then the controls are a bit stiff and don't really work super well. So it's, hey, you've come for the hottest take. Sonic ain't that good of a series of games.
Yeah.
But this one is still weirdly fun to me despite that.
Yeah, I don't
know
what
it
is.
Sonic, I've never experienced him before.
I think, yeah, look, if you like platformers, if you have a deep love of Sonic, I think this is one that's like, you know, worth dipping in on when it's like greatly reduced, or like borrow a copy or whatever it is. I mean, my ultimate goal was to buy this on Steam, because Steam has a very generous returns policy where I think if you've logged like, what is it, less than two hours or something, just get like your money back. And I was like, yeah, that, you know what, that'll probably do me, that'll let me kind of dip in, and you know, for the purposes of the pod. And but I mean, yeah, maybe it is just having the lowest expectations that I've possibly had with any game that I've tried in recent memory. I'm like, yeah, you know what? This is fine. This is like completely forgettable, but not. I don't think it's truly terrible in the way that I was expecting it to be, which probably says more about my expectations of it than anything else.
Well, I think the other point is that I don't give a fuck about Sonic at all. So you know, I have no skin in the game. So to me, it is just like a fine game where like, you know, I've got games that I love that I haven't finished yet.
Absolutely. So, well, yeah, like, so, the reviews all said, like, you know, oh, if they build on this and they did a sequel like that, you know, that could be starting to get good. But, and it's like, I do think that's true, but at the same time, watch Sonic Team absolutely not do that, and then just go back to the drawing board and make like some other bizarre version of game that also sucks.
I think that's the direction, exactly. The right direction for Sonic would be for all of the people involved in making Sonic currently to head in the direction of the door, and for someone else to be making Sonic, because they...
I mean, make another Sonic, like Sonic Mania was fucking great. That was the first one in years that's been legitimately good that people loved, and they're like, nah, not for us. No thanks. We're not going to do any more of that.
I think it's funny as well. Like, we can move on soon, but like, if we want to, or we can keep talking about it for the whole episode. It's our podcast. We don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
But like...
Now I'm going to run out of energy at some point, and I do have a game that I want to talk about this week.
Yeah, just quickly. It's so fascinating how Sonic is one of the most recognizable and surely high value media properties in all of the world.
Yeah.
And as a character, you know, it has genuine draw in a public consciousness way, and this is
the fucking movies did fantastically, and were good.
You know that thing where you just hear people talking about shit on the street, and that's how you know. Mm. I remember being in a bar once and hearing people talk about Apex Legends. I was like, "Whoa, it's getting big!"
Yeah,
and then I went out of the bathroom stall and stopped thinking about that and started thinking about Apex Legends. Whoa, it's getting big. Is the joke there? Do you understand? SonicQueef.google.com. But kids love Sonic still. There was a kid the other day walking down the street, and his mum was like, "Yeah, Sonic is really fast." Wow. Smart kid. So it's just baffling to me that they're able to let this continue. You know,
look, if they're listening, if Sonic Team are listening, like, look, compact your open world a little bit. Doesn't have to be quite so big, quite so empty. Use designs, aesthetic designs carried over from the classic games. Make the worlds visually interesting, like a Ratchet and Clank. You know, theme the whole world around, you know, 90s retro nostalgia. People fucking love that.
Give Fix Sonic the a son. Up.
Give Sonic a son.
Create some tension between the fight with Sonic and the son.
Sonic.
That's right.
Sonic doesn't want the son making the same mistakes that Sonic made.
Give him Big Axe. No, but like genuinely, you know, just tweak this game and the next one could be good. But like you said, it's Sonic Team, so they won't.
Yeah.
They won't do that.
You know what team wouldn't make a poor product in the way that Sonic Team would?
Oh, I've got an inkling. I've got two guesses, actually.
Actually, I can't predict the future, but I think there's two teams that haven't done it from the stuff I've tried. The first of which I'd love to talk about is Manscaped.
Yeah. Got a few too many blue quills downstairs. You got to trim them back.
Sonic's coming round for dinner. And I don't mean that I'm cooking, by the way.
Whoa. He might be coming round for some chili kind dog. Of Thanksgiving. Oh, yeah. At Thanksgiving. Or some kind of holiday celebration. Because it's holiday season, boys. It's the end of the year. It's the middle of the financial year, which, as you all know, that means it's time to celebrate and get together and give people gifts.
A good gift that you can get for someone in your life is something from Manscaped.
Mm.
They make products that primarily are for male personal grooming, but I can speak with authority that you can use them on anybody.
Go on then.
Not anybody you like. Get them to agree to it.
But yeah, whether it's whether it's for a friend or the friends in your pants, you can make this a season to be jolly with Manscaped. Do your little drummer boy a favor. Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. That's a good bit of copy. Use the Lawnmower 4.0 to avoid another silent night in the bedroom. That's a little... add in Manscaped's top-of-the-line shower products to have the people thinking, all I want for Christmas is you. That is... Their copywriter has put in some extra hours for this one.
They haven't been wasting time Googling Sonic Queefs. They've been Googling Christmas all day.
That's right. Synonyms for Christmas.
Pine nuts.
Santa cares about his sack.
Yeah.
And so should you.
12 maids of milking.
Five golden penis rings look nice, I guess.
Fit two on.
Look nice when you get naughty by going to manscaped.com and use the code FILTHY for free shipping and 20% off. Like we said, do it for yourself. Do it as a gift for a friend or a loved one and get 20% off and free shipping. Code FILTHY. That's a ridiculously good deal for products that we love and have endorsed personally for many years now.
While you're on the internet, you could go to nordvpn.com/filthy, I'm pretty sure, and get yourself a VPN. VPNs are important. They are a necessity, I would say, of internet browsing in this day and age.
Yeah, you had a personal testimony on our Patreon podcast, but you you mentioned having to use one for a movie that you watched recently.
I watched a movie via a foreign streaming service, and it was easy as pie. thanks to
if only the VPN they were called Pi VPN.
It started with the Pi anyway, but the NordVPN make probably the best one, I think.
And, yeah.
We've used it for ages. You can get a deal as well. You get like a huge percentage off, and you also get like 4 free months. Is it something like that?
You do. You get 4 months free. You got a 30-day money back guarantee. I'm on the page now for our offer. There's a whole bunch of information there. It's the fastest VPN on the planet. They've got threat protection as well, which is good for like malware and pop-ups and shit like that. Their encryption is top of the line.
Walk up to the biggest guy you can see in the street and say, I've got NordVPN. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Their customer support's 24/7, which is particularly important and helpful given that our listenership is global. But yeah, you can get a huge discount, 4 months free, and you can decide to get your money back within 30 days if you want, but there's absolutely no reason you would because, yeah, I know that Adam and I have been customers for literally years and years now. Yep. NordVPN support us, so you can also support us by getting a bloody NordVPN.
Support yourself.
Support yourself.
NordVPN.com/filthy. And then it changes it automatically because I went and had a look at the page too to nordvpn.com/podcast/?coupon=filthy and then you can fill in the rest yourself. But yeah, nordvpn.com/filthy.
Woo. Go check them out.
So we've wasted enough fucking time, I reckon.
Yeah. Go fast, brother.
Now that we've gotten Sonic out of our systems, we can center ourselves. And talk. Do you reckon this is? It's a stupid thing, but do you reckon this is the biggest game of the year, or do you reckon it was Elden Ring or something else?
I think it was Elden Ring, personally. Just based on the cultural cut through that Elden Ring had at the time. I know it's only been out for a day, so maybe I'm rushing to judgment a little bit. But like, I had random people who vaguely knew about games and that I knew about games be like, so what's this Elden Ring that I keep hearing about? You know, like it. Right. I feel like it had that kind of impact.
I've been getting that with God of War as well, though. That's okay. Been the thing of people going like, oh, this God of War game's coming out, huh?
I feel like still, even though it is such a big game, Elden Ring may be a little more niche in terms of the, like, in, you know what I mean? Like, you do need to be, like, incredibly good at this particular style of game to enjoy it, whereas, like,
it definitely
God of War,
blew up.
Probably, like, broader, like, install base from the first one.
Capital B blockbuster.
I don't know, maybe Elden Ring was more like, oh, now all these new people are getting into these kind of games, whereas this is just like, oh yeah, it's a great sequel to a great game that everyone is happy with.
I think it's interesting. It's always interesting when one of these just like big event games comes along and these sort of Sony first party these Sony first party ones.
You say sorry, Ross Purdy?
Never. I said Sony first party.
Sorry, that's so niche, but yes.
It's literally, that's not niche. That's literally just like one. Anyway, the.
Yep.
It's exciting when one of these like Sony single player games comes along. I love Uncharted and Last of Us and all the shit they do, and I've been so excited for God of War Ragnarok, and that is why I've played it for 16 and a half hours to say the following. Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, it's good, eh?
I'm liking it.
Pretty sick.
Blue blur.
I'll get out of the way at the start. I think that it, oh, maybe we already even said this in the group chat, or I did. It feels more like a continuation of God of War 2018 than the kind of sequel that The Last of Us Part 2 was, as an example. You know, like it, it's, sorry, it's on the same console.
You better apologize. COVID's no excuse to cough slightly.
You know, like it's on the PS4. It is, what is it? 4 years? 4 years between
four,
release.
4.5.
Yeah.
So not like, a crazy amount of time. Mechanically, it feels pretty much the same. Visually, it looks great, obviously, but it's not the change from a Uncharted 3 to 4 even, because I remember 4, the facial animations were like genuinely pretty mind-blowing and really, you know, took us back. But this is like a really, 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 really good and worth it cost-wise, value-wise, expansion of God of War.
It definitely, it kind of feels to me like, you know, with a lot of sequels, you know, they've wrapped it up and then they're like, you know, the team go away for a bit and then they're like, all right, well, back to the drawing board. Like, what could we iterate on? This to me literally feels like they wrapped God of War 1 and then literally the next day came back in and went like, oh, let's just keep working on a game. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it all feels, all the menus. And obviously I have some things to say along this line, which I just nitpicks for the sake of, you know, being on a thing, having a conversation about it. I don't think any of these are negatives in any way. I think it's a fantastic game. I'm having a really good time with it. But yeah, it truly does feel like you've just, yeah, picked up the first game and found an area that you hadn't discovered in it yet.
I will say that it increases its scope and what it's doing the further in you get. But to be clear, we're not going to talk story spoilers here, and I don't want to do like gameplay spoilers because some of them can wrap into and whatever. But it's so enormous and long that I think definitely at the start, and for all of it, to be clear, it feels the pretty clever name I've seen people call it is The Godfather Part 2.
Right.
He's a god who's a father and it's Part 2. And
Well, actually, it's not that clever because they've said that this is only going to have 2 parts. So
does The Godfather. It is 100% a continuation, but yeah, I agree that like when you're continuing some of the best feeling game of a whole generation,
yeah,
why not?
Because
it looks fucking incredible. This is a PS4 game through and through. Like it still is definitely a PS4 game, but it is the best looking one, I suppose, that they have made.
I mean, the previous one as well, it was like, yeah, the texture quality's there and the lighting and reflections and stuff, like they're all top of the line. But even more than that, it's the design. Like the environmental design in these two games is just fucking amazing. Like I love where I'm at now where there's sort of like hot springs and like weird corally growths, and like the color of everything is so vibrant.
Right.
It's
a neat trick because you start off in the snow and then you know, the next main area you get to is that area, which is a neat effect because, you know, I always think it's like hard to make a snow area look very visually impressive in it. You know, it's like very limited and then you get into this like very bright, very like way more open palette. It's just like it kind of really hits you over the head after having had like a couple of hours of like pretty muted, like snow, just kind of whites and everything.
And there's a lot of that variety because you're going to like all of the different realms over the course of it. They've said that beforehand too. That's no spoiler. That's like, but it's almost like a platformer or something, like this colorful variety. It's funny that God of War, this like thing about a dour fighting guy and it's an action game, is the colorful, bright thing with lots of different variety, where Sonic was like, oh, these boring, but like,
yeah.
It's so imaginative and enormous and detailed. The fact that they've got the size of what some of this gets to mixed with like any little corner you look at has so much fucking detailed, good-looking shit going on.
Oh, man, that like when you roll across the one of the first little towns and you're in the market square and the fucking pumpkins are all piled up and they look like real pumpkins. I loved it.
And it's not like you're seeing pumpkins every second minute of the game. You're seeing pumpkins there pretty much. Like,
yeah.
It feels the same to me as like Final Fantasy VII Remake, where there was so much, you know, so much detail in these incredible environments, which when that's in an open world, it's like, okay, well, people can muck around in this area for as long as they want. And you're often going back to the same areas again. In a game like this, it blows me away because it's like you're walking through this and then you're done. Like it's you know, it almost feels like a shame. It's like this is so detailed and so incredible, but like, yeah, just that amount of work going into something that like a lot of people would breeze through in about 8 seconds just
it means
feels
I've
like
been sitting there drinking it in a lot.
Yeah,
like, there's some beautiful fucking shit in there. I'm really enjoying every moment of looking at this game because like it runs well on a PS4 as well. I have it on good authority.
Okay.
And
who are your sources?
My brother who owns a PS4.
Okay. Nice. Do we consider him trustworthy?
It's only one source as well, and I gave them away, so clearly my journalistic integrity is low.
Yeah, but, it's funny. It's like...
because he's a North Korean informant too. He is like on the inside. I shouldn't have said that he's got a PS4 in there.
Like, saying this feels like a continuation. Yeah, I mean, there was... the first one was like perfect to most people. There was nothing about the first game where people were like... you know what, this one, these like couple of things they didn't quite get, it'd be cool if they improved them. So like, to just be so dialed in and then just go like, yeah, here's more of the same is obviously not a bad thing. And I keep thinking about, like, you know, the team working on Breath of the Wild 2, which Breath of the Wild 1, similar, you know, similar era to this, similar, like, you know, legacy and everything. And that team, they do seem like they feel like they have to like reinvent the wheel again with Breath of the Wild 2 from what we've seen of it. Like, they must kind of be looking at this and being like, oh yeah, fuck, god damn it, you can just you know what I mean, like, you can just do the same really good thing again. Like, what are we fucking busting our asses for with all this shit up in the sky? Like, we could just have the game start on like the other end of the opening plateau and face out in the other direction, and people would be fine with that.
Yeah, oops, didn't see over there, there's a whole other continent and another bad guy. Okay.
And he's head west. Doing a lot of the similar stuff, and the combat feels similar and all of that. Like, they are coming up with creative and inventive new things for you to do with that. It doesn't feel like in any way a retreading of the first one. It feels like follow up. It feels a continuation, as in it's still just as like intriguing, and the things that they're doing are fresh and So, yeah, I don't want people to get the wrong idea and think that this feels like a retread of a sequel at all. It's not that sort of thing, like a Call of Duty. It's like a proper continuation.
More, it is. I think Uncharted is a good comparison, and it is something that I kept thinking of while playing it, because it is so cinematic. You know, every level is so detailed, and the gameplay is so finely tuned, and there is, like, climate and puzzles and shit, you know, those comparisons. But, like, Uncharted 3 was similar to Uncharted 2 mechanically. It was, you know, there wasn't a lot different, but again, that was great because 2 was pretty much a perfect game. What they did have in there that was new was new locations, new set pieces, new enemies, new story beats, you know, new reasons to care, and they're all in this as well. And it is a pleasure to have still such, like, literally top of the line gameplay you know, to be able to utilize to make your way through, one of the best looking worlds I've ever seen. I had that really, like, silly moment of, like, climbing up the top of a hill or cresting, you know, some building and, you know, turning around and realizing, like, oh, there's a hell of a view of where I just came from, and getting the same feeling of when I've, you know, like, when you climb to the top of a mountain in real life, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so refreshed. I get the chance to look down over where I've come from. But it's like,
it's cool.
There's my house.
It makes you feel that. I don't know if I think I just didn't know that this was like a technical trick at the time of playing the first one, but the whole thing of, like, you know,
they're
anytime
not real
you...
people. They just make them out of triangles. It's crazy.
They draw them on computer.
It's all ones and zeros, brother. just the thing of, like, anytime you're, like, you know, pushing through a gap, or you're in, like, a you know, like an elevator or whatever, like, the game is, like, loading all the rest of it in the background, which, like, leads you to having this, because for anyone who hasn't played the first one, it's like it's all one shot. There's no loading screens. There's no select a level and then you're being, like, bumped out into a menu. It's just, like, completely fluid the whole way through. And I think just because I know that as a technical trick now, I am noticing it a lot more in this, which is a bit of a shame, because just when I played the first one, I was a bit more, like, I don't know, naive about how these things are made, where just, like, it really did work on me. I was like, wow, this is incredible that this is all just, like, flowing into one thing. So it's like anytime we're sitting in a little, like, you know, train cart or whatever that doesn't have windows in it, it's like, yeah, I fucking see what's going on here, boys.
Can't fool me, that cave ain't real.
I heard, I think on a different podcast, it definitely was on a different podcast. It wasn't on this one.
If you're going to say the thing I think you're going to say, it might have been from me, but all right.
I think I heard it from a games developer, but you might have also said it, where they'll put in these little cracks and funnels and things to stop people from just wandering around for too long.
I told you that last week.
You did hear it on this podcast.
Yeah.
No,
one week ago today.
No, I already heard it.
Because when I said it, you were like, oh.
I wasn't on last week's episode. No, I was being polite. I wasn't on last week's episode either.
So you're being polite when you weren't here last week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah,
yeah. And I think I came up with this concept, actually, and I taught it in
school. Yeah, I wrote to Corey Barlog back in, actually in 1999, the 9th of the 9th.
That's right.
I remember it because it was two years.
My dad did it before I was born. No, but because I even realized at one like little arena in Ragnarok where I was kind of like starting to wander around, and then I was like, oh, there's the little thing, the indicator. There's a little crack in the wall. Like, obviously, yeah, this is funneling me forwards through this game. And it's good. That's a good thing to have in there.
It works because the whole one-shot aesthetic thing really fucking works. And the mix between it, it's a linear game, but it has these sort of larger... It was a bit like Gears of War 5 was... I don't remember if you guys played that, but it had these kind of larger sections where you could go around and do sort of side things and then get on with the... And it just, it works so well. It's such a good middle ground between it being like kind of an open world versus a linear game. Like it's a nice best of both worlds kind of thing that really works. And so the gameplay that you are doing inside of that is the same as the first one. It's like this... kind of more slowly paced than the older God of War games action stuff. You've got your axe and you've got your Blades of Chaos right from the start.
Yep.
I'm flipping between them a lot more than I feel like I used to. I'm really using everything. I think the game is encouraging that a bit more somehow. There's a bit more enemy variety.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you get them pretty late bosses. In the first one, right? So
about halfway.
I feel like by the time I got them, I was a bit like... I was so dialed in on the axe that I was like, I've really got my head around this. I wondered if they were going to do like a kind of Metroid thing with this and just have you like somehow, because it is that thing when you come into a sequel, you know, you can't just assume that everyone is across all the mechanics and played that, you know, you might be getting people dip in on this for the first time. So, you know, often they have to do like a reset of like,
right.
Oh, you've lost all your skills and you have to go and build that up again. But like,
a little bit of it where they're like, oh, Fimbulwinter made us lose some magic.
That's true.
You pretty much got the same stuff. And there's a recap right at that first menu for the story of the first one. But it is really assuming you remember most of the details of that first game too.
I noticed that at the start of the game, I noticed these big tool tips telling you like this enemy is weak to fire, so use the Blades of Chaos.
This enemy
is weak to frost. I am using the axe most of the time just because I love how it feels. The Blades of Chaos obviously come into play with like platforming stuff and puzzle solving as well, which I really like.
Yeah.
I guess there was a bunch of that in the previous game, but I've forgotten, and I'm enjoying how much there is in this one as well. I like that stuff in these games.
I'm a sucker for it. I love a mild environmental puzzle
that
makes me feel like a genius just for working out like, go put that box on the switch. Doesn't matter what game, like the Mario Rabbids version of it, this version of it. I could honestly just play a whole game of just that without the combat even being in it and be happy. Like
literally two directions you can walk in and one of them's going to go the right way.
Right. I will say there's maybe a little too much at the moment of like, you know, you come up to a bit. Okay, we need to get the gate up. I wonder how we can do that. And I'm just like walking around kind of getting my bearings, kind of looking at where everything is and like... Within it feels like about 5 seconds, one of your companion characters will go, hey, why don't you go up that platform? You know what I mean? It's like they are really not giving you... I like that in a game when it's done organically, when it's like you've been walking in every direction for like 10 minutes and you clearly don't get it. But I feel like they're coming in a little hot with this.
They're jumping on it a bit. It was similar in Horizon Forbidden West as well, where like Aloy would just say to herself, like, oh, I guess I better walk up there and push the switch. It's like, it's the only thing in the room. It's bright fucking yellow. I'm going to push the switch.
Yeah, and it bums me out because it makes me go, oh, this game thinks I'm dumb. It's had to activate the code. It's like, bring in the moron protocol. This guy does not get it.
The smartest man in the world is on your hip and he's like, why don't you freeze the geyser, Kratos? It's like, it's the only thing to interact with and I've got an ice axe.
Yeah. It's a little... Anyway, Sorry, you go.
No, I kind of agree, but it speaks to a lot of what the game is doing, where it is like this kind of big blockbuster crowd pleaser thing, where so every element of it is like trying to the combat can get quite hard. Like it at some point starts pushing you, especially the side things. You know, you've got to be parrying and dodging and all of that stuff in a especially post Elden Ring, where it's debatable whether that was a bigger game than, you know, people are used to that now. So I think that the game isn't difficult. The puzzles aren't difficult. It's not trying to be also. It's trying to be popcorn all the way, baby.
Yeah,
and it's delivering the most fucking delicious, buttered, fantastic popcorn you could ever stick your dick in. So
the biggest challenge for me at the moment is getting my fucking head around the fact that the circle button isn't the dodge button.
You can switch them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's okay. The first thing I did.
Yeah,
same. It's I absolutely
it keeps fucking. I dove
straight into the menu because I turned off a bunch of the HUD stuff. I really liked how immersive you can make it. You could make the previous one, and I did the same with this one.
Yeah.
I wish there was an extra button on the controller because you do need everything that's already programmed in to quick turn. Because I feel like you can get surrounded quite easily.
Constantly.
You can remap your buttons, but I do feel like everything is kind of necessary anyway.
Yeah, you don't have that back and circle kind of Resident Evil style swing around.
Because of how lumbering Kratos is, and he, you know, you have a tendency to strafe more so than I don't know, it's just kind of the way that the game works. But, you know, you get to grips with that. You start to just, you know, dodge a couple of times instead of just once. You got to, learn or remember how this game treats combat specifically.
The control, the movement controls in general, I was noticing this when I was playing today, they are like first-person controls because if you're going left and right on the left and right stick, on the left stick, you're strafing. Typical, a 3D thing that would kind of turn you around. And then your right stick would be purely camera, but this is to move the angle of your body, you're using the right stick. So it it almost is an FPS style control.
Same as the first one.
Did you guys notice this? This really made me laugh. At the very beginning, you know, we get this little intro and same as the first one, you know, deep, mythical world, throwing us into the lore, you know, we're being chased around by a lady who's turning into a bird and all this very kind of mystical stuff. It's very cool. And then it's you get to a point, and I'm pretty sure they did the exact same thing in the first one, where then you get to a bit of a slower walk segment and then the credits kind of very elegantly come up on the screen. And so it's you've seen all this stuff. And then it's the first bit of text that comes up on the screen is the name Christopher Judge. It's just such a modern day, vanilla dude name. Just kind of the incongruity of just seeing Christopher Judge come up on the screen really made me laugh a lot, out of nowhere.
He does a great job as Kratos too. The name certainly doesn't seem silly to me, a Teal'c fan, but I
gotta
think
kick you out of here, Tommy, straight through the Stargate.
If what's that, if that sort of incongruity between fantasy, high mythical magic's real world and modern era stuff bugs you, I think that's one sort of change from the first one that we've kind of all noticed. It sounds like of the writing is a little bit tuned differently. It's still not bad, and as you get into further into the story, it takes a while to cook up to the same heights as the first one. And there are lower troughs, I think, as well in some of the plot here, but it gets going. But the general sort of tone of the writing is slightly turned over to the jokier side.
I've noticed a lot more kind of more modern turn of phrase, definitely, than I don't remember it sticking out to me in the first one. And look, obviously, they're all speaking English, they're all speaking in American accents. But then there's just a little bit of, there is a little bit of not probably not quite to this extent, but you got it. You know,
no problem. Keep going. Keep playing later. There is genuinely, there's a character who I am not exaggerating, said some variant on We Got This genuinely about 50 times in the around 1 hour you're kind of with them. It honestly is, it's not that big of a deal and your mileage will vary. I think we're particularly sensitive to things getting a case of the Marvel meat morphs or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like it just does great slightly. But yeah, it just noticeable. Like, one of the villains is kind of doing a James Woods Hades from Hercules type of thing. Like,
right. Yeah.
It's weird because, like, yeah, Game of Thrones, like, you know, I'm going through that at the moment. And obviously, you know, that's like a show that's set in a wildly different era. And, you know, I don't want to be watching something
Here's the scary thing, Tommy. Maybe it's not that different at all.
Oh, my God. But they're not, like, talking in, you know, Shakespearean dialect or anything like that. Right, you know, they're taking some liberties in the same way. But there's no point in something like a Game of Thrones where you're like, whoa, that, you know what I mean? Like, oh, that sticks out. You can have them talk modern for sure because, you know, a modern audience has to be able to understand it and, you know, not need a fucking degree to, you know, understand these dialects that these people are using. But, yeah, just when it's weirdly noticeable when it tips into, like, this very, very kind of, yeah, modern vernacular. It sticks out. It's an odd line.
Yeah, I think especially after playing it for a bit longer now, it's a grain of sand in the boot or whatever. Like, it's not super bothersome. It's just noticeable as compared to my memory of the first one, but the more I think about it, the more there are those longer sections where you're, like, going through the big mine in the cave. And so it was a lot of just sort of dialogue back and forth. But I think it's the story gets grander, and so it's examining part of the cool thing about that first one is it was so hyper focused on Kratos and Atreus and this father son relationship that like intimacy led to it being to really exploring all of that stuff, and you get more and more characters showing up in this one and interacting with each other and stuff, so you get a bit more of that like Mass Effect bridge kind of here's all this rogues gallery thing, which is cool in its own way. And I think the further on it gets into the story gets used in interesting ways. Just noticeable.
Yeah.
It's weird when the first one, they nailed it. It didn't stick out to any of us back then, I'm pretty sure.
No, definitely not. And
they got greedy.
Like I'm having a look at the script. I had a look yesterday of the first one just to make sure that I don't have rose-colored glasses. I think a lot of the writing between Kratos and Atreus, in the first one was particularly good. And that is most of what's happening. It is like surprisingly tactful and nuanced. And the way that Kratos treats his son is changes throughout, but is very unique and is portrayed really, really deftly and really well. And also, yeah, the way that Atreus acts is like crazily like accurate for a young boy as well. I just thought the overall vibe of that stuff was super beyond what you would expect, you know, like 11 out of 10. That's part of why it hit so hard for so many people beyond it just being fun to play. It's like, it was so fucking good. And like, I think overall story aside, because I'm only, like 4 or 5 hours in, it's like 5% off.
It's just a little noticeable, I love the idea
stuff,
of being
which
like,
I feel like is maybe, I don't know if it's in that script or not, is maybe where it was happening.
It is, or it looks like it, because there's a lot of stuff that's like, oh, why are they saying that? Oh, it's like combat dialogue.
right. Yeah, it's not a big deal, and I do think that because Atreus is a teenager now.
Yeah.
And some of what the story or, you know, the tone is going for is Atreus being this like awkward rebellious teen or whatever, you know.
Mm.
And so you're going to have an annoying little cunt, which in some ways you did in the first one, and that was part of what was cool. So they're doing that stuff well again. I think, the story is still interesting and it is going well and it has the scope and the scale and it really just takes its fucking time to develop in a way that I think is cool. Like, if you've got the resources to make this long, big, epic, why not? Like, trust people to stay with you for it.
Yeah.
For sure.
I love the idea of being like, have I played the first God of War? No, I've read the script though. Oh, you mean God of War? You mean that game that had that script that they adapted into a video game. Yeah, I'm a bit more familiar with that.
Yeah, when the God of War script was making the rounds back in the day, there was lot of buzz about it.
I've seen the stage adaptation. Okay,
because you sent a link of that script, being like, "Am I crazy? Or is this slightly more whatever?" Like. And I looked at the script and just kind of scrolled to a random point. And the first thing I saw was Kratos grabbing axe, boy. And it made me think like, yeah, maybe it was fucking awesome, that first one. Maybe the writing was perfect.
But yeah,
the
I
characters
mean,
have changed in the ways that they changed through the first one. And I'm so interested to see where it goes. So some of that incidental writing gets, it all feels a little less consistent as that first one.
Right.
Like the story as well, peaks and troughs, because it's doing more, it's expanded. Yep. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, we'll talk about that at a later date, I suppose.
Performance-wise, everyone's crushing it.
Yeah,
everyone absolutely at the top of their game. Did you see there was a quote like a little while ago from one of the people working on it about the guy who, I forget his name, the young man who plays Atreus, who is in a great film called Mid-90s, which you should check out if you haven't seen. He's the lead in that. And they were like, oh, yeah, we worked on it for so long, and because he's like a young guy, his voice started dropping halfway through. So, you know, we had – and it's like, yeah, he's a young guy. Like, I just thought it was like such a funny thing to, like, out him as. It's like, yeah, okay. Just, like, kind of being like, yeah, we had to go in and do all this extra fucking work because all of a sudden this 12-year-old's voice changed. It's like – yeah, cut the kid some fucking slack.
It's not like he'd be a little bit fucking, you know, self-conscious about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sunny Suljic. Yeah, everyone is doing great.
Oh, he's also in Killing of a Sacred Deer.
I did not
connect him with the fact that he was in mid-90s.
The very first thing he does in this game.
Fuck, maybe that's why he was cast.
Fuck,
maybe that's why he was cast.
The mid-90s, or at least that's how they're talking.
Yeah.
It's interesting to I'm so interested to see how it wraps up and where the story goes and everything, because there's so much of it filling all that time in between. My favorite stuff is like the way they talk about the mythical stories that there are, and you know, hearing all those history lessons of like, well, here's what Freya did at this point and Odin did this and da da da, like that stuff is handled so well in all the and like, it's strange because the previous God of War games prior to 2018 had a juvenile sense of humor for the time, which was, oh, look at this guy, you're torn apart, and oh, look at this girl, she's got tits, and oh, look at this guy, he's been blown up on the shitter or whatever. And I guess
last one. Really good.
It's just sort of I don't know. We'll talk about the story properly one day.
Yeah. But yeah, loving it. It is more of the same game. But yeah, that doesn't matter when it's more of the same of basically a perfect thing. I am glad to know that this is, you know, that they are treating this as like a two-parter and then we're out.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to see more of this world. But you know, I would probably, you know, a third bite of this same cherry. I would probably rather them like open it up and do something like a little different with it.
The fact that over the course of these two games, they've thrown every fucking kitchen sink at this, and, you know, screaming as they do it, chains attached to the sink, throwing, like, they have, especially as you go further and further into this one and the scale becomes more and more apparent, like, they've done what they can do with this setting and this type of game, and it's really cool.
You know what they could do next? Make it open world, put a lot of loop-the-loops and rails and floating islands and shit around the place. Make Kratos like tiny and blue and really fast.
Finally.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're just done with the Norse pantheon. Which, it feels like there's not much left to be done with Kratos, you know? Like, he had his sort of self-reflexive, you know, arc last game. This one is more about Atreus growing up. So after this, do we flip over to it being the Loki show and he's, you know, skiing down, you know, skateboarding down the pyramids? Like, I know that's what people speculated, but like, It'd be a shame if it's not Kratos, because he's, you know, the protagonist.
He's a good character too, and I think that is one of the big things where, like, having that's part of why that temptation to have some of the wackier characters and whatever be a little more like get it, because having Kratos be like shut up, does work for me, and I get why they want him to, like, just little things of like them going like, hey, could you be a little more careful with this next piece of armor and try not to wreck it? No.
That's
funny that you said
I don't
no
mind
to
all that.
That
stuff. Yeah. You're right. I guess that is in there for a bit of balance, and they're just getting a little carried away with, like, the little dwarf guys are kind of sassy. And because at the end of the day, you do have this guy who, Kratos isn't ripping out those lines. It's like he's the palate cleanse kind of thing.
And there's story in those side quests, and there's character and personality in those side quests. And so I recommend doing them, because, like, there was one later on that, like, had a genuinely really emotional, nice moment that was like, damn, I've not seen something like that in a game in that way before. And it was really cool. So it's worth doing them. And they count to this story, as far as I'm concerned, because of that. So it is like a 60-hour long story.
Yeah.
And when it starts getting into more of that, like, crazy melodrama, god soap opera, it's still working.
Yeah. I think they just didn't need any extra humor. Like, not everything has to be funny all the time, or mildly funny all the time. And I liked that the previous game was pretty serious and nailed a serious story without having to, like, give themselves a safety net, which I feel like is that what that humor kind of is, right? It's just like, oh, we don't have to fully commit to this because we're having a bit of a joke. But anyway, we've nitpicked that way too much.
Yeah, it's just a special interest topic for us is all.
Yeah,
so
totally.
Of course we talk about it more.
I guarantee you most people listening to this have never even noticed that in the game.
They probably like humor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's like it's a bunch of chefs going like, I wish I didn't have to eat. Like,
yep.
It.
Yeah.
Not that we're chefs. A bunch of cooks. Artists. A bunch of line cooks.
A bunch of artistes, Adam.
Sure, sorry. It's such a fun game. It is. If you played the first one, you know what you're in for. If you haven't played the first one, go and play that first.
Yeah, yes. Definitely.
You definitely have this to just get them back. Yeah. Treat them as like a back-to-back experience. It's not
right.
It's not something that you can in any way say like, yeah, just jump in here. Like, no, go and play the first one. You're not benefiting at all by just doing that.
Tightly wound and honed the gameplay of it. Amazing looking. Oh, the music is great again.
Yes.
The way they carry themes under, you know, different characters' themes and all that stuff. They do that well, and I wish movie scores would go back to doing that Star Wars style. Mm. Have a theme. Yeah. Have a little motif coming
funny,
in and out.
I love this guy's score for this game, but he did a movie. He did The Rings of Power, which I did not like. Actually, all of his movie scores I've really disliked. But ironically enough, he does a movie style score for this game and the previous game. Some of the best stuff in games, I reckon. I love the character designs of the new characters or the characters that have come back again from last time. The sort of over the top, but yet still realistic, you know, like not cartoonish in any way, but still exaggerated. I just love it. I love the detail, the you know, facial hair and the, you know, the tattoos and all the shit hanging off them. The enemy design is good. There is an enemy that pops up, the one that spits poison at you that fucking shits me so bad. Everything about this game is 10 out of 10. I love it.
Yeah.
It's a good game.
We'll be back next week with more thoughts about it. But until then, we got to wrap this up for another week. Head to filthycasuals.com.au for links to all the stuff that we have going on. We got the Patreon. You get a bonus episode every week. You get early access to our videos. You get into our Discord channel and our private Facebook group. Yes. We got heaps of stuff on the YouTube at the moment. We're doing a Let's Play of L.A. Noir, and then we do heaps of little one-off videos, hundreds of videos on there, so please go and check that out and give them a like and subscribe. Guys, thank you very much for listening. We will see you next time. But until then, as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals...
This is English Kratos, lad.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.